Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Following On podcast from TalkSport. I'm John Norman. Alongside me, Jarrod Kember. After every day's play of the West Indies series, we will be bringing you a bite-sized chunk of cricket news and chat as we look back at the action from the Aegeus Bowl for the first test, then Old Trafford again, I think. Then maybe back to the Aegeus Bowl. Either way, there's going to be a lot of Aegeus Bowl. Plenty to talk about today. And I didn't think I'd have that to say with an hour or so to go before stumps. You're listening to the Following On podcast. So if you are listening to this podcast, you probably already know the scorecard. Possibly you missed the last hour of play, though, and don't know what happened at the Aegeus Bowl. Well, this game has turned on its head. England ending day four, 284 for eight. So a lead of about 160-odd with Jofra Archer and Mark Wood at the crease. What's that, you cry? When I left to go and pick up the kids, Ben Stokes and Zach Crawley were putting England into a position where they could win on day five. Well, they may still win, but a mixture of Shannon Gabriel and Alzari Joseph combined to just drag this game back the way of the West Indies. Plenty to talk about today, so let's get going.
Story of the day.
Jarrod, be honest. In fact, we're always honest, but why don't we do our story of the day as though play had finished an hour previously? Say play had finished at 6 o'clock. What would your story of the day been?
If play had finished at 6 o'clock, it would be that England got the start that they wanted to get, in that they essentially nullified the new ball. And nullified the second new ball, if you think about it in a Duke's way. So, you know, between 20 and 45. And that the strength of their middle order was coming through. That would have been the story of the day at that point. It's no longer the story of the day.
It isn't. And I think what would have furthered on from that story of the day is we probably would have spoken quite eloquently about Zach Crawley. And we would have said that actually, of the two sides, England probably are the favourites to win the match. The draw would have still been favourite, but still, they would have allowed themselves a good two sessions to try and test the mettle of the West Indies. And we saw Roston Chase, a man you widely tipped yesterday, never to take a wicket ever again, cause a few problems. Dominic Best would have turned his arm over. The pressure would have been on the West Indies. We've seen it many, many times when a side has been in front for 4 days to find themselves on day five, you know, up against it. Funny things can happen. However, the game actually finished at 7 o'clock. So, Jarrod, what is the story of the day?
The story of the day is essentially, I think, what I tipped to happen yesterday in our throw forward section. West Indies don't stop putting pressure on you. They keep putting pressure on you. It is, a hallmark of their game over the last 2.5 years. Even when they haven't always been able to pull it off, they don't let you get away. And England's strength is, well, Stokes at this point, but Stokes and Pope probably in the middle order. And to be fair, Crawley stepped up today. And those two things sort of clashed, didn't they? And essentially, it was England that cracked a little bit earlier. But maybe they still have enough to win the game. But I think that's essentially what happened there. The West Indies don't let you get away. They don't really let you score runs. And I mean, Shannon Gabriel is probably the only bowler they have in their side who regularly goes at over 3 runs and over, and he just attacks the top of off stump all the time.
You're right. I did call it. Alzaro Joseph did play a big part in the game today. Thank you for that. You're right. I think it was England who blinked first, really, today. I got it wrong yesterday when I suggested that if it got to a position in the game where it looked like England were just about to go ahead, as they were, you know, they were approaching 150 leads, two set batsmen, 249 for three. They're kind of seen off, you know, a good whack of the second new ball. And it just seemed like it was England who was starting to dare to dream. But that didn't happen at all. Holder took Stokes's wicket for the second time in the match. And then Alzaro Joseph took two, should have taken three, because Bess was put down off his bowling. And then there was one of those marginal LBW decisions that I talked about yesterday with Craig Brathwaite. I think it was yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday. That went against West Indies insofar that Brathwaite was given out. Went against West Indies today. Bess was not given out, and they kept the review West Indies. Anyway, that's not really anything to do with the story of the day. But yeah, we've got a game, and listeners, depending on what time you're listening to this podcast, you know, within the next 24 hours, your social media channels could be flooded with tweets along the lines of "That's why Test cricket is the best game in the world."
You should just tweet one of those now, just in case.
I did think as I was watching Burns and Sibley and Denley go about their business today in a manner that's totally expected. Penny for Trevor Bayliss's thoughts, you know, Mr. Go Faster. He didn't want one blocker in the top three, and England have got three blockers in the top three.
Look, they don't have a very strong batting lineup. You're better off taking balls out of the game if you don't have batsmen who can score, you know, who can average over 40. I'm not sure any of those three, and perhaps even Crawley, you know, at this stage, although he might go on to be a different player, are ever going to average over 40 in Test match cricket. But if you can take 100 balls out of every innings, you make it a lot easier for Joe Root and Ollie Pope and whoever the wicketkeeper is and Ben Stokes.
One other thing, as I watched Jofra Archer come into bat late on in the day, is that suddenly England's tail is a lot longer than it's been in recent years. And, you know, a lot of England's problems, or rather England's successes, have been built on, somewhat unwisely, I would say, the likes of Sam Curran coming in and hitting a quick 50 and turning a low-scoring game around.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to Jofra and Wood, you know, they are pretty good number 9 and 10s in any sort of normal situation. But what you're talking about is how good England have been with their tail end, because they've been batting, you know, guys like Moen has been batting at 8, and Sam Curran, I think, might have even batted at 9 in one test. Chris Wokes has batted at 9. You know, you can't compare that to what it is now. But realistically, Mark Wood is a very good, probably number 9 prospect. And Jofra Archer probably even has more batting potential than Wood going forward. So realistically, it's just that at the moment they're not quite there yet, perhaps, with their batting. But they're not the worst tail in the world. But West Indies is the best tail in the world. So, you know.
Moment of the day.
A few moments of the day today. The one that comes to mind. Well, there's two that come to mind. First off, is that the last we'll see of Joe Denley in international cricket, that lame clip to mid-wicket?
You can't actually call him out, can you? Because what has he done differently in this test than he has done over the last 15 or so tests? Or how many tests he's now played? Essentially, this is what he does. So if you're being realistic, he can't be dropped for this, because he's doing exactly what they brought him into the side to do. Take some balls out of the game and, you know, bat in the positions that they need to have someone bat. I mean, the fact that Zach Crawley made runs behind him, it probably suggests that it's the end of Joe Denley. But whatever him and Ed Smith have going on, it seems to keep him in the side. Realistically, he should not be in the side going forward. As I said, it's not his fault. It's a very good bowling era, and he's a bit of a flawed batsman. But, that was a terrible way to go out. And to be honest, he was trying to go out with the pull shot already. So it wasn't as if, you know, he was batting beautifully and then he chipped one up. He should have gone out. Was it Alzaro Joseph, I think, was bowling, and should have had him out pulling on the boundary as well. What on earth was he thinking? He has the ability to block, and play a stupid shot. It's like, you know, reverse batting.
Well, Joe Root's coming back in the second test match, so I think that might be it for the other Joe. Another batsman whose position was really starting to come under scrutiny towards the end of last year. Personally, I've always been a little suspicious of Jos Buttler, unfortunately, at test level. Never really quite bought into the loving for him on that you do see undoubted talent, though he is great guy, speaks very well, but a bit of a luxury item, I'm afraid. And I feel he's destabilized Johnny Bairstow. I don't think Bairstow was doing anything wrong at number 7 or 6, keeping the gloves. Buttler came in and it all went horribly wrong for Bairstow. And I think it's going to go horribly wrong for Buttler, because surely England are going to have to make a big call on him sooner rather than later.
He came into bat number 7 at Headingley, made those runs as a specialist number 7 batsman. And I wrote an article saying, this doesn't make sense. And I don't think it's good for English cricket at that time. Nothing that I've seen since then has changed. He's just failed more often, which it makes sense. He never made first-class runs. There is a reason he had never made first-class runs. It's because you have a slipped cord in as much as anything. And he also has a couple of other weaknesses that he's kind of developed in test cricket. But essentially, as someone who's gone up against him as an analyst in T20 cricket, I tell teams to put 2 and 3 slips in there. Now, you know, he's getting 4 and 5 people in the cordon when it comes to test cricket. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, this idea that these players are going to transcend what they do. There is a reason Owen Morgan didn't make it as a test cricketer. There is a reason that Jos Buttler didn't make it as a test cricketer. If he was averaging 45 for Somerset and it was a bit streaky at times, I'd be like, that's fair. Let's give him a go. Bring him in. But he wasn't brought in like that. And he's never consistently made first-class runs. Now, it might be psychological, it might be technical. I think in these cases, when it's a white ball player, we always hear it's psychological. I'm not saying it's not. I think that certainly plays a part. But he has technical issues. And those technical issues are much easier to find in test cricket than they are in white ball cricket, where he is a potential, you know, Hall of Fame player in white ball cricket going forward. He's already, you know, an England great. He might go on to be an all-time great. He's an incredible white ball player. But let's be realistic here. He's not a great red ball player at any level that he has played. So why would you suddenly think that was going to change? And then, and I've gone on about this so much on TalkSport and, you know, Crick Info and, you know, just to people, if they cross me in the street, I usually start telling them this. England had about 93 guys who could bat at number 7 who could do incredible damage to opposition teams. You know, Moeen Ali, Chris Woakes, Johnny Bairstow. You've also got Ben Foulkes, who changes England's team a little bit as well. Sam Curran is another one who's a potential for that position. They had a million number 7s. So why try and make Buttler into that position to begin with? And then they put him up the order. Well, if he's not making runs at number 7 consistently, he's not going to make runs at number 6 or number 5. None of it makes sense to me. One of the things I find very funny is that Jofra and Wood are the reasons that England have been struggling in this test, not the fact that Joe Denley and Jos Buttler are subpar batsmen. And that's not having a go at them. They are, you know, there's a reason why they have been picked. It's because England don't have a lot of good batsmen out here. But this whole idea that because Broad hasn't played and that's why England fell behind in this test. Come on now. Jofra and Wood had to bowl on the flatter pitch. Broadie would have had to bowl on that pitch as well. Maybe he would have done well. Maybe he wouldn't have. But realistically, a lot of this problem comes down to the fact that England don't have 7 batsmen who are consistently making runs. And they haven't had them for, I don't know, since they were the best team in the world.
Yeah, much as the parallels are drawn between Broad getting dropped in this test match and Broad getting dropped in the first test match in Barbados. You know, that's the reason that England lost in Barbados. Well, no, you know, England were bowled out for 77 in Barbados. That's why they lost in Barbados. One last thing in terms of moment of the day, just a small one, probably actually isn't worth me talking about, but Rory Burns really does get out in some strange ways, doesn't he? I mean, if you were to put together a list of every single way he's been dismissed, he must have covered the whole lot. I mean, apart from obstructing field, he's done it all.
It's funny you say that, because Dom Sibley seems to get he's reverse cordoned his batting. Where he only seems to go out caught on the leg side between mid-wicket and the wicket-keeper. And yet Rory Burns still sticks out in your mind. So that tells you how weird Rory Burns' batting has been.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Shot of the day.
The reason I didn't mention Dom Sibley was because it was his shot of the day, or his dismissal, that is going to be my shot of the day, because Lawrence Booth, topspin, on Twitter, you know, asked a question that I'd already written down, I was already thinking about, but it's a little strange. I mean, look, we have seen players targeted with a leg side trap. I mean, It does happen, but I struggle to think of a player. Maybe if I'd read all the answers to Lawrence Booth's tweet, maybe the answer's in there, but let's just imagine it isn't. I can't think of too many players where essentially they get targeted, caught down the leg side quite as much as, and not even with a leg slip half the time or a leg gully. It's caught down the leg side by the wicketkeeper. Can you think of any? I can't.
Bathurst is the one I remember the most. It's usually older batsmen who have bad backs because they can't get away from the ball around their hip and their ribs. And so they don't have the flexibility they had when they were younger, and they quite often nick off. Whereas it's not that for Sibley, although that ball is a particular problem for him. But it's not just that. It's something to do with the way he sort of scoops the ball to the leg side, makes him a constant catch.
There's a lot of trigger movements from Dom Sibley. He does move quite far across the crease towards the offside. I don't know if that's got anything to do with it.
Well, I mean, Steve Smith, they set a lot of leg side traps for him, and he has the same movements and for the same reasons. I wonder if Sibley isn't actually coming into, and you see this around the world. I think we've had an incredible crop of bowlers of the last 3 years, 4 years. We've also had slightly friendlier pitches over that time. But the other thing that's changed is that every team has an analyst and every team knows every weakness now. And what you are seeing is very specifically the best bowlers using the best plans against each individual batsman. I can't think of teams doing this that consistently to Graham Smith. They would do it occasionally. And yet there's nothing that Graham Smith does realistically that Dom Sibley doesn't do. They both crab across the crease and close the face of the bat. But I don't remember the fielding being as exact for him, if that makes sense. Whereas I think now that the sort of the ability to watch so much video, I mean, so if you're a player and you want to watch, you can watch every, what did Sibley face? 150 balls today. And you're a right arm seamer, right? And from the West Indies, you can literally go through and watch all of those clips in about 5 minutes, 6 minutes, perhaps. And you have a really, and by the end of that, and when you do it, it's a really interesting thing. You know, as an analyst, you start to like straight away just notice these patterns emerge. And then you've got the analyst doing it as well. You've probably got the bowling coach having a look at them as well. And then you start to play around with these fields and these different kinds of strategies. I think that it's the culmination of all of those things that is happening to Sibley. If you think about cricket in the 90s and 2000s, more often than not, what you would do is try and get someone out in the slips. That was over and over and over again. That's not what teams are doing anymore. The slips are still there. A lot of teams are going away from that and going, do you know what I'm going to do? We're going to try and make sure we hit the stumps as much as possible. Or we're going to bowl, we're going to be like Neil Wagner. We're going to bowl short as long as we can for as long as possible. All these different kinds of things are coming in because we now have, it's not that cricketers hadn't thought of these things before, but they have the technology and the people helping them to put all these plans together. And I think that Sibley perhaps has fallen into that kind of world where teams are just like, this is what we do to him. He's going to have to keep twisting the ball to the leg side. He's going to nick some. He's going to pop up a couple to short mid-wicket, and occasionally he's going to go to leg gully. It's a very hard thing for him. That is like 90% of his scoring shots. So what does he do? He literally stops scoring. You can't do that in Test cricket either. So it's a really interesting one for me.
But let's remember, he scored 50. So
I thought he batted well.
Yeah, I did as well. It looked relatively comfortable for much of the day, and his innings was one of the reasons for that.
Ball of the day.
Shannon Gabriel knocking out Don Bess's stump. So I don't know how many times he missed Don Bess's off stump by a millimetre. Roddy Eswick, I think if you were going to, right at the moment, you're going to start an academy from scratch in, say, a country like Afghanistan or Ireland, you would bring Roddy Eswick in as a bowling coach. What he's done for that bowling unit is incredible. It wasn't that long ago that Shannon Gabriel was fast and nothing else. The ability to change a few things in Shannon Gabriel, fix his wrist position occasionally, he's still not perfect with it, but essentially say to him, mate, if you can bowl 90 miles an hour pretty much throughout your entire spell, if you bowl it at the top of off stump as much as possible with a couple of short balls occasionally, you are going to be so hard to play. And that's essentially what he does. There's not that much difference between what Shannon Gabriel does and what Pat Cummins does. Pat Cummins might be a little bit more repeatable. He's a little bit fitter. He doesn't have the size of Shannon Gabriel, so he can probably bowl the spells a little bit easier. But essentially, that's what it is. And I think it was three balls the previous over. I thought he had bowled Don Bess or had him caught behind. It was incredible. So to finally hit the stump from wide on the crease, angling it in, fading it away, you can't actually face those balls consistently. A proper batsman can't, let alone poor Don Bess.
Lol of the day.
So listeners will understand that during the day, Jared and I are texting away or WhatsApping away. And I texted you, didn't I? Or WhatsApped you saying, I'm struggling for a lol of the day. And you just replied with the word Hugh Jardon.
And which I believe now is trending on Twitter, that phrase.
Yes, it is definitely trending on Twitter. But I looked at it, and you know when you get a message from someone, you think it's predictive text gone wrong. So you just wait for a little bit, and then I looked at the top, and it didn't say typing. So I realised that that is what you intended to. So I just Googled it, and then I saw why. And I realised as soon as I put it into social media, because I had caught the end of Rob Key on Sky Sports. I mean, he just lost it. He couldn't even speak. He was laughing so much. Care to explain?
Essentially, Sky decided that it would be a great idea to read out tweets live on air of club cricket, because club cricket was back today. And they made a couple of attempts to sort of talk about club cricket earlier in the day, and they hadn't quite taken off. And I think the producer or the director has just come in and said, look, everyone's talking about club cricket today. Why don't we just get people to say, you know, great games and bad games. And people have been sending in their great games and their bad games. Anyway, do you want me to read you the tweet?
Yep.
So they go. I'm sorry. They're going through all these different things of, you know, so-and-so's made a golden duck and someone else split his pants and all these sorts of things. And then Athers reads this out. Unbelievable scenes from Cockermouth Cricket Club. Now, this is the good thing about this tweet. I don't know if you know this. Cockermouth Cricket Club is a real cricket club, and it's where Ben Stokes played. So Athers, being Athers, has read that and gone, ah, Cockermouth. He adds a fact at that stage. He stops to add the fact about Ben Stokes. And then, but the rest of the tweet is, with Hugh Jardon bowling 6 for 9. So Hugh Jardon, 6 for 9, is obviously quite clear. At this stage, Rob Key can't breathe. And Athers must work it out. Now, I think that Rob Key actually started laughing around Cockermouth, but I think it's possible he saw the tweet as well, realised what the joke was. He was trying to tell Athers about the Simpsons, but he couldn't actually stop laughing to tell him about it. If anyone hasn't seen The Simpsons, you know, the scenes where they would ring up, Mo, and they would say, is a Hugh Mass there? And he would say, his huge ass there, all that sort of thing. So, yeah, it was a great moment. Just to stop on Sky, obviously day one, they get a lot of credit for the Black Lives Matter stuff, and they went into it again on day two. But the commentary team, you know, having Rob Key, Ian Bishop, trying Ebony Rainsford Brent out in her position, all those sorts of things. They have just completely nailed this test from beginning to end. And Sky Cricket have never had me on Cricket Writers on TV. They never mention any of my articles. They don't help my career in any way, shape, or form. So there's no crossover there other than I know some of those guys. I say this as someone watches more global cricket than anyone else. They are so far above the quality of any other cricket broadcast in the world consistently. And in this test, they've taken it to a whole nother level. Perhaps because they're all working a little bit harder because they've got nothing else to do because they're all in lockdown. But I think they just had a great test. Maybe not the person who passed this this tweet to Athens, but everyone else involved in Sky has had a great test.
Yeah, well, I'll totally endorse that. Of course, I do have some links to Sky Sports because we used some of their talent, didn't we, for a couple of the tours. And when you consider they got David Lloyd on the bench waiting to come back in, it just shows you the riches.
Mark Butcher as well. I mean, do you know what I mean? They have set up a very good structure here. You know, no one's going to like everyone, but when they brought in Ian Bishop for day three or day four, I was like, geez, that's bringing in a fairly big hit when you're already doing pretty well.
Anodyne press conference moment of the day.
Zach Crawley, top score today with 76, but did he have anything interesting to say?
Oh, that's not my place to say. I mean, my job's just to score runs. And I try and do that every time I go out to play for England. And, you know, that's what I'm going to continue to do as long as I get a chance. But, you know, that's for the powers that be to decide.
No, he didn't.
What is going to happen tomorrow?
Well, it's not going to be a draw, is it? So who's going to win?
I don't know. I've seen Craig Brathwaite bat before. If anyone can make this a draw from here, it is Craig Brathwaite, even if he's going for the win. I love that he did the masterclass and he basically just talked about how to defend as late as possible. It's the most Craig Brathwaite masterclass I've ever seen. You would assume that with West Indies batting, but the flat pitch, they are still the favourites. So their batting brings them down a little bit, but that pitch is quite flat. But there has been a couple of balls shoot and a couple of balls hit gloves and things like that. There is a potential that if the pitch breaks even a little bit, the pressure of Jimmy Anderson is going to be quite immense, I think. And also, if the pitch plays up and down even slightly, that brings Ward and Jofra way back into the fold. So I would say that England is very slight favourites from here. But also, it depends, I suppose, on how quickly they get rid of the tail. If Wood can have one of those innings where he hits 30 or 15 balls, which he's very capable of, you know, then England is a massive favourite for me. I don't want, you know, with my West Indies hat on. I don't have a West Indies hat on. I have a West Indies scarf, but that's a whole different conversation. But with my West Indies hat on, I would say that anything over 220 is really tough for the way that they bat. But if you're ever going to be in a situation where you can chase that, you basically want your middle and lower order to be quite strong. And that's kind of their strength. So it's not the end of the world for them. As long as you need Shai Hope or Craig Brathwaite, probably to bat quite long. And they've also obviously got the other opener. He can get off to a bit of a flyer. But realistically, I think you need one of the strong top order guys to bat for a long period of time, and then you need the middle order to take over. It's all possible. I don't want them chasing more than 220 if I'm feeling comfortable in them.
So who's going to win?
I would say that with all that, it's going to be a tie.
Look, I think West Indies have got a glorious opportunity. They have chased down these kind of totals before. We know what Shai Hope and Craig Brathwaite did at Headingley. Remember that series a few years back when it was a drawn series in the Caribbean, and Darren Bravo chased down a score in around about, I think it was about 170-180. It's a flat track. I'm tipping West Indies to win just because, of course, you know, you're right. They are going to be reliant on Shai Hope and Craig Brathwaite to make it a comfortable victory. But an hour of Blackwood, and you know, all bets are off, really. And we saw what Holder can do as well. Donbass is going to be really interesting, especially if the game goes late. You know, if there's 30 or 40 needed or something, it's going to be a brave man to throw the ball to Donbass, even if they've only got 3 wickets to go. So I'm just tipping a West Indies win. But yeah, I agree. It's going to be tough for them. Pressure will be on. If England can reach 200, last day pitch, set up nicely. It's what we want, really, isn't it?
All four results, John. All four results are there available for us.
We are 20 minutes nearer to the "this is why Test cricket is the best game in the world" tweets. We'll be looking back at the action, no matter what happens, on the following on podcast. Myself and Jared Kimber, plenty to discuss after day five. You imagine there's been plenty to discuss today, and I didn't think that would be a case an hour ago. Thanks for listening to Following On Podcast. Listen on Acast, Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And we'll be back after day five.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.